Welcome back to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. Lori Walden was the first African-American television news director in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and in fact, in the entire state of Wisconsin. In 2018, Lori was recognized by Sacramento NAACP as one of its Black Women in Film and Television honorees. She and her newsrooms have won some of the highest awards in local news. Lori was the news director at KCRA in Sacramento when the Stephon Clark shooting happened. She guided the newsroom through the intense days, weeks, and months of coverage that followed. In that same year, she joined me on Insight to talk about the case, her reaction, and how her life was shaped by the neighborhoods and the attitudes that she grew up with in the 60s.
So I grew up in Berkeley, California in the 60s. So I'm a proud Berkeley 60s person.
That says a lot right there.
I love telling this story. I guess I would describe our family as upper middle class. And when I've asked my mom, and you know, she would say, yeah, we're upper middle class. My dad was a probation officer. My mom was a social worker. She was kind of high on the management ladder, so she was in Contra Costa County as a social worker. And my younger sister, we are 17 months apart. And when I was born, we lived not too far from UC Berkeley. And then when I was 7, we moved to the Berkeley Hills. And that's significant because that's a really nice area of Berkeley. It was an area that my mom and dad saved to buy a house there. And it was beautiful and still have a house there. What's significant about that is we were the first African-American family on our block. No, we didn't have any problems, but I became aware very early that I was the only. And it kind of set the stage for a lot of my childhood and young adulthood. I got used to being the only, whether it was the first family on our block, one of only a handful of Black kids in my classroom, in Girl Scouts, as a traffic guard. I would look around and I would be the only one. I spent a lot of time trying to fit in because what I didn't want to do was to stand out. And I never lost who I was. My mom and dad, we've always been very proud of who we are. But I found myself in the middle of trying to fit in and also holding on to my identity and who I was.
How did they talk with you about this, your mom or your dad, together or separately?
Mm-hmm. The one thing that I always heard in my family, and I'm so proud of it, is, first of all, education. Education, education, education. There was no choice. We were going to college, so that was important. My mom would always say, use your voice, speak up, don't be afraid, even when I would want to not say anything. It's like, no, speak up. Even though we lived in an area that didn't have a lot of African Americans, my mom and dad spent a lot of time making sure that we spent a lot of time with family friends, that we were in a lot of different neighborhoods, because even though we were proud to live in our new neighborhood, it was important that we understood that we were part of a very strong Black community.
But they also knew that as the only, you were going to be watched.
Very carefully.
They had expectations of you, but they knew that the community around would have incredibly intense expectations of you as well.
Absolutely. I remember my mom saying, it is so important to be the best. Don't ever settle for second. Always be the best. And they knew that, you know, that's a great point, Beth, that they always knew that people would be watching. And so it was really important that we spoke correctly. It was always important that we carried ourselves a certain way. Again, proud of who we were, but to always recognize that people were watching. It was always important as well to not only be good, but to be the best. You know, there's that adage that you have to be 5 times as good to get half as much. And so it wasn't enough to just be okay. And it wasn't a bad kind of pressure. It was just realistic.
Many people have a story similar to the one you're telling in which the house that the family bought or the neighborhood that the family lived in became very powerful. It became anecdotal in the family history and said a lot about the movement culturally. Something on par with your character, your level of integrity as a person.
It did. You know, my sister and I recognized that we lived in a great neighborhood and we recognized that we lived in a really good house, but we didn't brag about it. We didn't try to flash it around.
Did you ever have tough experiences because of where you live? Were you ever challenged being the only there?
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that. My sister and I took the bus to school every day. We took the regular city bus, and it came to our neighborhood. When we would get on the bus and we'd stand at the bus stop, we did see other African-American women. And I didn't recognize at first who they were. And my sister and I, we didn't know any better. And we would say, hi. You know, we were little kids. And some women would say, hello. And some would say, hello. There was a difference in how they said hello. One day, we struck a conversation with one of the women at the bus stop. And she said, so where does your mom work? And we said, oh, she's a blah, 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 blah. What we recognized later was, I think she meant, which house did my mother work in? Because she was a maid. And we didn't recognize that at first, but my mom explained it to me. And again, I didn't dwell on it, but it's something that I filed away.
After graduating from high school, you went to USC. Mm-hmm. You moved on to becoming a news reporter, and the first big job was in Peoria, Illinois.
Right.
I've seen some of those early stories. You had to do racially charged news coverage. You covered Klan events. You covered aspects that were very close to your own history and in some cases far away from your own history. Did you learn or see the world differently in becoming a news reporter and seeing more of the world?
I did. When I grew up in Berkeley in the 60s, I had this notion that, you know, even though we lived in a neighborhood where there weren't a lot of other African-American families, it was not only a diverse city, for the most part, it was integrated. And there's a difference. When I moved to other places, whether it was Peoria or Mobile or Charlotte, I recognized pretty quickly that the rest of the country, it was not like Berkeley, California. There was segregation. And I was used to, growing up in the Bay Area, moving where I wanted, walking where I wanted, living where we wanted, whatever I wanted to do, we did. And I recognized that in other cities, that's not the case. Black families lived here. White families lived here. Yeah, you could kind of go back and forth, but, you know, with a little bit of wariness. That's when it really hit me. Everybody didn't grow up like this, that there is segregation. It did bother me a great deal. And that's when I started becoming a lot more aware of, well, then how do people see me? The confidence that I had of, oh, I can walk where I want. It's all of a sudden, it's like, oh, you know, am I supposed to be here? Or what's going to happen if I shouldn't be here?
Plus, you're in the news business then at that point, yes. Where being naive is not a good quality for a news reporter. And ultimately, after a number of years, you want to move into management. Tell me about the struggles that you hit in the business. Are you able to separate which are because you were a woman versus being a Black person and a Black woman?
Right. That's such a great question, and I get it all of the time. I think that management is tough anyway. I mean, take the being a female or African-American out of it. Just leading people, I think, is different. There were quiet moments where I would go home and I would wonder, okay, is my voice going to be strong enough? Are people going to listen? Are they going to second guess me? Am I going to have to climb hurdles that maybe, you know, others wouldn't have to? But that's in my own quiet moment. When I got in front of people, when I was in front of people, when I was leading, I couldn't have that. I knew that I had to be strong. It didn't make any difference. But the other thing, Beth, I tried to do was just be authentic and to be who I was. And people responded to that. I didn't try to carry that around with me. It was just be a strong leader, listen to my voice, and have vision.
You're listening to Lori Walden. She grew up in Berkeley, graduated from USC, became a news reporter, transitioned into management. And then a few months ago came the Stephon Clark shooting. And I'm going to pick up on something you just said, because you are described as an empathetic and compassionate leader. Did you give yourself latitude to absorb what was happening in the city as an African-American person who might have a sense of that experience, of the Meadowview family experience, versus putting on the leadership role that you had to have in the newsroom at the time of covering a major story in the city?
I looked at the story and I understood the pain that that family felt. I understood their anger as I watched the story. I also recognized that there are many voices and that my role as the news director and as the leader of our news coverage was to bring lots of voices into this story. Not only to help our reporters shape what we were doing and to bring about, you know, here's what's happening, but what don't we know? What don't we know? So that wasn't what hung over me as I was leading our news coverage because I had a bigger job.
I need to check myself on something I just said. Mm-hmm. I made an assumption that you would understand.
Yes, you did.
I did.
You
and
did.
I need to apologize in this moment, not only to you, but to anybody else that might have found that wrong, mm-hmm. not to mention offensive.
Mm-hmm.
And I had already said it before I realized what I had said. So that's such a perfect example of how we're still learning.
But see, here's why this is important and why this conversation is important. Because there was a part of me that assumed wrongly that maybe people in my newsroom or others would say, oh, she's going to be sympathetic because they don't know my experience. They assume that I'm Black, and because this family was Black and the pain that they went through, that I'm automatically going to side with that. That happens all of the time. It's unintentional, but it happens. There are people that meet me that assume I'm a liberal. There are people that assume that they don't know anything about me. They assume that I am. And this is the armor you walk around with. This is, you know, this is what I'm used to. And it wasn't intentional, but I understand why you did it.
When I invited you into this conversation, it was because I believed you had these experiences stored away, that there are just parts of life that you navigate, that we all do,
mm-hmm.
that maybe you don't talk about, you don't share. And I'll just draw the parallel with the Me Too movement, how after that started, mm-hmm. suddenly women everywhere were kind of telling their stories.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to know whether, in spite of the family upbringing that sounds so positive and well-rounded, were there challenges? Have there been challenges and assumptions? And boy, you just educated me quick on we just don't know. We aren't aware sometimes where we're stepping.
Absolutely. It is every day. Just when I think, oh, you know, things are going, and not going well, but just, you know, life goes on, something happens or somebody says something that reminds me that we still live in a time where there is racism. Sometimes it's overt and sometimes it's not. My husband and I, who are big foodies, will walk into a restaurant. We are very cognizant of where we sit. Are we going to sit by the kitchen? Are they going to seat us in the middle? Are they going to seat us by a window? We're really picky about where we sit because we've been in situations where people will seat us off to the side. And sometimes it's just because maybe there's not a table available that we would want, or is there?
Do you say something?
Oh, we'll say, oh, you know what? Can we have this seat over here? Oh, sure. Or, well, okay. When we were looking for a house, I'll never forget this experience. We were looking for a house, and we weren't just pre-qualified. We were pre-approved, and we were looking for a house. I think it was in the Berkeley area. Open houses are on Sunday. A lot of times people will show up and they're in casual clothing, and we knew that we had to be better dressed than everybody else because we had to prove that we could afford this particular house that we were looking at. And I'll never forget being in a house, and we walked around and the realtor was kind of following us very closely. She assumed that we couldn't afford it and said, well, wouldn't you be, you know, there are some really nice houses in Richmond. Have you thought about going there? You know, Richmond is predominantly Black. And we said, well, this is where we want to live. Oh, okay. Little things like that. When I was a kid, you know, and people would find out where I lived. What do your parents do? You know, how in the world could you afford it? Little things like that that I didn't necessarily know right away. But as I thought about it or my mom and dad explained it to me, I got it. So, again, I'm kind of used to that. It saddens me. But I think conversations like this are so important. Mm. Are so important.
What kind of conversation do you have with the reporters in your newsroom? Because I hear from them that you're not only teaching them how to go out and cover a story, but you want each one to be a leader in or her own right. So that means guidance in a number of different ways on your part.
I love you. Do good homework, Beth. I try to talk with our reporters not just about what they see, but what they sense. You know, there's a question that we often ask, you know, what did you see, what happened, and what surprised you? I think that's important. I don't want all of our reporters to be the same. I don't want them all to see the world the same way. That's what makes, I think, our newsroom so terrific. I want them to bring their own voices and their own signature to their stories. And my job is to help them become better versions of themselves. It's not to tell them, this is how we do it. It's bring your voice to it. And so I'm real picky about who we hire because I want to hear their voices and how they bring that to the work that they do.
How old were you when you think you were starting to find your voice? I think it's very difficult for a young 20-something to even understand that they really have a voice, let alone know what that is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There is a proverbial example of being at the table. Being at the table is really important. That's the editorial meeting that we have every day. And at that table, at those meetings, we decide what stories we're going to do. When I got a seat at that table as an executive producer, as a managing editor, as an assistant news director, as a news director, as a corporate Hearst person, when I look around and I'm sitting at the table, that's when I realize, you know, wow, I have a place here. I have a voice here. That's important. It wasn't given to me. I earned the right to be here. And if you earn the right to be here, then that means my voice is just as important as everybody sitting at this table. That's when I recognize, hey, I've got a voice. There's a reason why I'm here.
That was a conversation with former KCRA news director Lori Walden in June of 2018. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio.